Ray, what day is it?
Financial day.
It's Men's Health Thursday.
Is it? Men's Health.
And we're talking about...
financial.
Financial, finances, savings, investing, scary shit.
Getting your money right.
Getting everything right. Getting your investments right. Getting your...
credit.
Credit prepared. Talking about credit. Talking about...
retirement.
Retirement. Talking about IRAs, Roths.
Traditional IRAs. Talking about stocks, investments.
Scary stuff. Scary stuff that people don't usually touch on because it's icky.
Yeah. Well, if you don't have the information and you don't know what you're talking about, of course, it can lead you through a mind. But with the person that we have today,
yeah,
he makes it all easy for you. If you didn't know about finance, if you didn't know about retirements, about 401ks, IRAs, this is your guide. This is your help. This is like your quick notebook.
Absolutely. This is basically a fast-paced course for finance education as an individual. And you'll definitely get a lot of input from this. And as guests, we have my doppelganger.
Doppelganger. Your twin.
My twin. So, yeah.
We meet that twin who's the dancing partner from the group. Oh, man. This is exciting.
Yeah. Anyhow, with that said, we have a special guest, Ricardo Peters.
Yes.
Great financial advisor. And yeah, hope you guys enjoy this show. What we have today is our special guest, Ricardo Peters. He's a financial advisor. Ray, I know you and I have talked about this, that the black community, we don't really touch on finance. We're kind of afraid of it. It's like the hidden boogeyman in our community.
Yeah, we prefer check cashing stations. We prefer not saving, not using banks. So.
Yeah, all these things we don't. And Ricardo's here. He's dedicating his time to teach us a little financial tips that we can use even at middle-aged men. Rick, would you please give us a little history of your background in finance so the people can understand where you're coming from?
My background in finance, I've worked SunTrust, worked there for a couple of years, then went to JP Morgan Chase, where I started off on the credit card side and then went into the banking as a personal banker, then a private client banker. Then I became a financial advisor, was there for 10 years. And then I decided to open my own financial firm so that way I could kind of do what I've always been preaching and help educate people on financial literacy, especially people from a lower economic social status that don't have the opportunities that other, I'd say, people of non-color have, you know, by having dad and mother and the knowledge of the stock market and how investments work, how credit works. So I felt that, you know, opening up my own firm and teaching individuals how to not only how to grow their money, but also how to do it themselves, giving them that financial knowledge that is so lacked in, like you said, the black and the brown communities.
Got you. What was finance something you want to pursue? What actually made you get into finance? Because I know it's not something, like you said, the black community, the brown community doesn't really touch on. We all want to be rock stars. Musicians.
Well, we always want to be rich, but we don't know how to be rich.
Exactly. Or sports players.
Right.
Well, that's a very good question. So growing up, I mean, Reggie, you should know, I used to want to be an actor. And the reason I wanted to be an actor is because I love to entertain and, you know, make people happy. You know, when I decided to move to Arizona, I was going to move to California, but I was dating somebody that lived in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And I remember I met her in Florida when I was living back in Florida at a club. And as cliche as it sounds, it was like at her best friend's wedding. She was in town for her best friend's wedding. She was at a Caribbean club. And then when I met her, she was like, I asked her where she lived. She said, oh, I'm from Arizona. I'm like, people live there? Because it's a desert. I was like, I didn't know people could live. It's like 120 degrees. So we exchanged numbers, became friends. And then later on, because I was always planning to move to California to pursue acting, I decided to move to Arizona for a year and then go to California. I end up liking it a lot here in Arizona. Saw that when I was as a banker, I was helping clients, I was taking these young individuals, teaching them about credit, teaching them about finance. And then within like 4 years, these same people come back and they graduate college and they're like, hey, I got $20,000 in the bank. I'm going to buy my first home. They're buying their first home with me and everything. So I'd watch these individuals. I was changing an individual. I was breaking
a mold,
generational curse.
Oh,
you know, I was teaching these kids how to, you know, how to break that generation curse and change their lives. So that's what made me really want to become a financial advisor, because I didn't know it. And what I tend to do, a lot of people like to focus on the things that they're strongest in and perfect it. And my thing is, you don't need to perfect what you're strong in. You need to go where you're weakest then. So a lot of people will, for example, they say, I don't want to be like my mom. I want to be like my dad. And they run away from them. But what you, if you run away from what you, you know, you are not trying to face, you will end up becoming it or running into it. So a lot of people become their parents.
Yeah.
So my thing is, I wanted to face, you know, investments. You know, I didn't understand the market. It's very ambiguous. You know, they say that if the market's so scary, like they tell you on TV, why is the top 1% in it? It's because it's not. You know, but they keep it ambiguous to keep the lead on top and the ones on the bottom on the bottom. And then you have the people in the middle that kind of understand it. So my thing is, I didn't understand it. And I always like to take something apart, you know, and then put it back together. So that way I understand it to the fullest. My favorite, one of my favorite quotes is from Albert Einstein. He said, if you're an expert in something, you should be able to explain it in the simplest form. And if you can't, then you don't really understand it yourself. And that speaks volumes to a lot of people in the professions that they're in. But sometimes people learn verbatim something, but they don't truly understand what they've learned, but they just speak what they learn. You know, they speak in their jargon, whether it be a lawyer, whether it be a financial advisor, and so on and so forth, a scientist. You should be able to break something down in the simplest form. You should be able to explain your expertise to a fifth grader, or you know, and they should be able to understand it. You should be able to explain to a child. So yeah.
Why do you feel that the black and brown community have a hard time with credit and with the stock market and things of that nature, finance?
I feel the reason is because, one, I think there's a disconnect. There's a lack of resources and understanding and knowledge. So, for example, you know, it's kind of like that rich dad, poor dad thing. I mean, for example, what your father with my mother, like we grew up, you know, with my stepdad, but more with my mom, what they've learned has been carried on. Like, for example, if you, let's think about a family recipe, you know, like we're from the Caribbean, we make for Thanksgiving, you know, let's say macaroni pie. And that's something that's been passed on the way they make it. Right. And you may have your own like family traditions or whatever you, that's, or something that a way of, like, for example, on Saturday mornings, Reggie probably does this too now, to this day, where my mom used to wake up on Saturday mornings, turn on Anita Baker, and we'd start cleaning the house. Saturday mornings is clear to clean the house, top to bottom. You know, it's something that's passed on. Right. So these are the things that are being passed on to us, the food, the, you know, the music, this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. When other, we're not having that, hey, do you know what credit is? Okay, let me explain what credit is. Credit is, the bank is going to lend you money and you have 30 days to repay this. If you don't repay this within this amount of times, you're going to be charged interest. Interest is the fee for using their money and not paying it back on time. You know, you want to make sure that you borrow and pay back on time so that later on you build up your credit, because the country is built on credit. And this is how you get homes. This is how you get cars, because credit is power. We're taught cash is king, right? You know, if you don't got the money for the car, you don't get the car. You got to save up the money to get the car.
Yeah.
You know, that's the things we taught. And also we tend to idolize things that aren't real. Like growing up in a black community, you either want to be a rap star, a ball player, Michael Jackson, you know what I mean? A gangster, because that's the stuff that's publicized in the media. So nobody's looking to be a doctor. No one's looking to be a financial advisor or a lawyer, because we don't believe we don't see that in ourselves. You know, we think we look to be rich, and I want us to be wealthy. Rich is Shaq. Wealthy is the guy that writes check the check. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's a mentality that we have to break. It's something that, that we've been conformed to, brainwashed to believe. So I think if we are, if we have that knowledge, those resources, that's how we break that cultural and, like I said, generational like curse and from when it comes to wealth.
At what age do you think we should like teach children, our kids, about finances?
Immediately. You know, I think what happens is, you know, I think the minute that a kid can open up a savings account, and you teach them that, you know, compound interest and simple interest. So simple interest, you know, let's say you put
money in the bank. Yeah, you put money in the bank and they get interest off it, 1% interest off of it.
What? Right. But then, you know, so that's simply 1%. Let's say you put 1% for $100, right? Mm-hmm. Then that interest, simple interest, won't grow on top of that interest. You'll still, let's say you leave $100 in there, let's say 10%. You know, 10% from the $100 at $10 will just be another $10 the following year. Compound is where your money, the interest, that one, now the following year, the 110, you're getting interest off 110 now instead of just $100. Mm-hmm. So compound interest is a way to grow your money. Teaching kids that putting money in the bank and having it grow. Well, back in the day, you know, savings accounts could have been, used to be like 5%, 10%, 15% or what have you. Now savings accounts don't pay anything. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just the luck of the draw. They don't pay anything, but there's other ways to grow your money. So teaching kids the importance of saving and paying yourself. So, for example, a savings account, like I would tell a customer that says, oh, I don't have money to save, you know, when they'd come to my branch. And I'd say, even if you take $25 from your paycheck and put it into a savings account, do it. Mm-hmm. Because what it does, it enables, it builds a habit of paying you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pay myself before I pay my debtors, my everyone else. So it puts value in yourself. So you're paying yourself. So, and then when people say, oh, I put $25 in there, but I had to take it back out. I consider a savings account a bill. You know, treat your savings account like a bill. For example, who you guys got as your phone carrier? Verizon, AT&T.
AT&T.
Okay. So let's say you pay AT&T $120 one month. Can you go back and say, hey, AT&T, can I get $25 back from that?
No.
They'll look at you like you're crazy, right?
Right.
So treat your savings account as a bill. You pay it, you can't take it out. You know, and then when you get to a certain amount in your savings account, then it's time to move it to investments. And then keep a certain percent cash.
Kind of investments you're talking about as far as CDs, or you're talking about as far as going into the market?
I'm talking about, no.
Well, IRAs?
So you should always, okay. For example, I don't know if you guys could see this. I'll try, but let's see. So here you have two elevators, right? I don't know if you can you guys see this or no?
We kind of. There we
go. Yeah, I see a chicken scratch.
But you have two, let's see, yeah, two elevators. Elevators, right?
Yeah.
Elevator one, elevator two. You're in the middle of an earthquake in California. Which elevator would you get on?
The one with three cords.
Two, yeah, two. One. No, it's two, right? Two is the one with three. One,
this one?
One, yeah, right, is that one, Eric? It's
the one. And why is that? Why is
it's
that?
More secure.
Right. Yeah.
Because if one cable breaks, mm-hmm. you have two. This one breaks,
you're done.
Right.
Yep.
So that's the same thing when it comes to your money. You want to have some money in cash, some in bonds, some in stocks. So you want to have it diversified. So it's not just one thing is the best thing to put it in. It's everything. Mm-hmm. It's just percentage wise based on your goals, your time horizon, your age, how you're going to diversify how you're going to allocate that the amounts that go into where, what category, what pocket.
So what would you say to a middle-aged man that's just starting to get into finance? What would you tell them to start? Let's say if they're starting off and they can only donate maybe $80 to $100 a month. What would you tell them to do? How would you tell them to allocate that money, where to put that money? You know, middle-aged man now. So we're talking about mid-30s, early 40s probably.
So here's the thing with that question. You see, with that question, there's a lot of things that, you know, variations that need to be answered. Middle-aged man, okay, well, what's your debt to income? How much income are you bringing in? How much is your debt? So these are questions. What is the money being invested for? Is it for what's your horizon? Is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? Is it retirement? What debt do you have? What other money do you have available right now? Are you working? I mean, does your job provide a 401k? Is your company giving you money on your 401k? They match into what's percentage? So there's a lot of variations. If you ever meet a financial advisor and you walk in there and you say, "Hey, this is much money I have," and the advisor tells you, "Okay, yeah, I know where to put it in. I know exactly what to do." And they haven't even had a conversation with you and let you talk and speak your goals and what you want and what concerns you have, run. Because that person's they only see money. They see dollar signs. Mm. So to your question, Reggie, every individual is an individual, you know, and they have different concerns and different goals. So I can't say, to say in this podcast to do this, that, and a third, because then someone's going to follow that and be like, "Oh, I failed. Why did I fail?" And because it didn't match what their needs are. So it's got to be tailored to that person. But I would definitely say, generally speaking, if someone's middle-aged, they have no 401k, let's say if their job offers a 401k, you know, start investing in the 401k, the retirement. So 401k is one that's sponsored by their job. Invest in that, especially up into the point where the job matches. If the job's matching 5%, go ahead and put that 5%. That's free money. Also, make sure that they're making selections in that 401k, because there's a lot of choices on the 401k. Make sure they're making selections that are going to meet their goals and their needs. Also, put some money aside for savings. Like I said, you always want to make sure that your money's keeping up, making money. You know, a lot of people are afraid of investing, and because they don't understand the stock market. Do you guys kind of understand the stock market?
Yeah, to a degree. Yeah, I do the penny stocks, man.
Okay. A little bit.
Hold, Rick. Okay. Time out. Well, this thing came off. Hold on. I can edit this.
No, it's going to shit.
No, you're fine. I can repeat that question. I can edit it right to where it was at. Stay where you're at. Yeah. Get it all the way on. So all the way on and then tighten it
perfect. Now, we can start all over. This is kind of, let me know if I'm running crazy.
You're doing what?
Let me know if I'm going off.
Is that good? All right, cool.
Yep.
All right, cool.
We apologize for that.
No, you're good.
All right, cool. Go ahead and ask the question again.
What was the question?
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, yes. So you asked about the market. You're fine, so you can go on. You can answer the question because you already asked us it.
So a lot of people, you know, when you explain the stock market, stock market seems very confusing. And it's really meant to be that way, but it's really the best way I can simplify the stock market is this. What is the biggest sales day, of the year?
Isn't it Black Friday?
Yeah, I'll say that. Yep.
Okay. Black Friday. Yep. And why is Black Friday out of every other, sales day? Why is it so popular? Why is it so politicized? Why is it, publicized so much?
I don't know.
Why are people lined up
from because the door? Biggest deals.
Because of the deals.
Because of the deals that they're promoting.
But why are people lined up?
Because they think they're getting why are they lined up?
Yeah.
They think they're getting the savings, right? They're getting big discounts.
But why didn't they just go on Friday? Why are they lined up right at Thanksgiving dinner?
There's a shortage of it.
Supply.
Yeah, supply and demand is shortage.
Okay, so then after somebody buys that, so let's say the PS5, they buy from Best Buy, mm-hmm. What do they end up doing with it?
Selling it. Profiting. For what? Selling it for, they're putting it over the market, probably be two times, three times what it was worth. making money.
Like eBay, right? They put on eBay, right? Yeah. And then 3 weeks later, you go to Walmart and they're all on shelves for the regular price.
Yep.
Right? Okay. And then the person on eBay that called out and put their thing over budget, what happens to the price of the one on eBay?
It goes down now.
But where does it go down to now?
To the market price.
To the market price, yeah.
Or lower because they can get in a store. Why would I get it from you if I get it from a store? So they have to go below that store.
Yeah.
Okay. So now think of picture walking to Walmart and seeing Apple company, seeing Tesla, and you're seeing boxes on the shelves, right?
Yeah.
And then you see, so think about the same thing, supply and demand. So the only difference with the stock market is that you're buying shares of the company.
Okay.
So it's the same thought process. So you buy shares of the company because everyone thinks, oh, I could buy this infinite amount of shares. No, it's a finite amount of shares. That means that let's say Apple only has 200 million shares, right? For example, then some good news comes about Apple. Now the people who have got there's the initial public offering, the IPO. Mm-hmm. So you have an initial public offering and then everything else is being sold on second market, which is eBay, basically the market. And that's when people list their price. Like now Apple's hot. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and list my Apple for 160 a share. And then somebody says, you know what? I'll buy it for 155. And then finally the person in the auction thing goes and matches and puts a deal and it's they agree on 157. That's how the market works. It's an auction, basically supply and demand. Now, for example, when Apple had the bad news, right, about the batteries, you guys remember that?
Yeah.
Their batteries, what happened to Apple stock? It went down. Why? Because people who owned it sold it. So now there was a flood of supply. Just pretend like you're in a store. You see a bunch of things on Apple.
Yeah.
Then what's going to happen? They're going to drop their price because they want to get it off the shelves. So people flooded the market back with Apple, and you could buy Apple $100 cheaper. It was at two something, it dropped down to 160 something, and that's how the market works. So I would say to people who are first time investors, invest in what you know. You like Nike, buy Nike. Don't just buy the sneaker, buy the stock. You believe in Samsung, buy the stock. You know what I mean? Be an owner in that company,
right?
Not just because the consumer.
Because you buy stocks. So for example, a stock, when somebody does an initial public offering, they're putting their money, they put it public so people could buy into it because then they could take that money and then they could pay CEOs. They could let's say Apple wants to do a new iPhone 30, right? Or for example, so they do what is called, they want to do they want to do credit. They want to borrow. So they do borrow in the form of a bond. You guys have heard of bonds, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So basically a bond is Apple says, okay, Ray, you give me $10,000. I'll give you 4%, 4% on $10,000 for the next 10 years. And I'll give you back your $10,000, right?
Okay.
So when Apple does that, they're not giving up control of their company or shares. They're borrowing money from you, and they're gonna pay you interest. The only thing is if Apple goes bankrupt,
you
may lose the money, right? Uh-huh. Because that's the part of the deal. You made a deal with them. Now, let's say Apple says, you know what? I don't want to give up ownership or pay a debt. Let's just go ahead and do a second public offering, which they did. Like they split stocks or what have you. And let's go and have people invest and buy into our company. That way we could take the money and invest in our new product. And if we have a great year, we'll pay what we call dividends back to our shareholders.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you buy now, the only reason you're buying stock Apple is because let's say you bought it at 160. Now let's say Apple in a year goes to 260, which it had happened before. Now that $100 gain, which is called growth, it's also just like with your home. If you bought a home at 160 and now it's 260, what is that called? That difference? What do we call it?
We call it, crap. Don't say the word, bro.
It's a trick question.
No, it's not. I know the word. It's called the, no. Dang it, man. It's the I
it's
word.
It's called the E word.
Equity. Equity. Yeah. Okay. Equity in the house. Yeah.
So they call stocks the growth they call it a growth product and they call it equity.
Okay.
Because that growth between it is the equity. So called stocks equities, they call bonds income, income product or bond. They call it a bonds income because they pay you interest. So stocks are known as equity, bonds are known as income.
Mm. What are your thoughts on Robinhood of investing that way?
The thing, my problem with Robinhood is that when you invest in Robinhood and let's say you want to buy Apple, Robinhood's going to suggest the price to you. It's not going to let you suggest the price. And a lot of people don't realize that you could, when you're using like a Charles Schwab or
E-Trade.
What's another one?
E-Trade.
Mm-hmm. You put market limit. A market limit is you listing what you want to buy it for.
Right.
Market, if you're buying it at market is the price that, let's say, somebody put the price, let's say it's at 160 and then somebody's like, I'm selling for 170. That's the thing that pops up. You're going to buy it for 170 instead of putting, oh, I want to buy it for 155. And then you might have somebody want to sell it and get rid of it at 155. And then it can match. What Robinhood does is sometimes they list it over that because they keep that extra. That's why it's free, because they're taking that extra fluff that they're listing. So let's say if it's at 160, they put 165 and keep the $5. That's why I don't like Robinhood, because they overinflate the cost when they don't let you decide. So I don't like Robinhood for that.
Gotcha.
But like I said, the E-Trade, the Charles Schwab, so a lot of banking firms have certain ways you could buy a stock from their own platform too.
What do you suggest for people who, let's just say, who are not aware of any kind of financial information? You suggest just going to YouTube or finding a financial advisor, or what do you suggest for that?
That's a very good question, and I suggest all of that. I mean, quite honestly, we are in a day and age. I always say this to Reggie and my brothers, that I wish I grew up in the YouTube era. Mm-hmm. You know, I would, like, nowadays, like, I mean, you could learn to code. You could learn to play basketball. I mean, I would be like, I could have been like the ultimate athlete because you don't even need a coach because of YouTube. Mm-hmm. You know, we're at the age where this information right at our fingertips, there's not an excuse for somebody to say, I'm not good at something. Unless the only excuse I accept is because I choose not to be. Because anything else is just pure ignorance. You know, if you don't take the time to invest in you, then everything else is pointless. Then it shows you how much you value yourself, because, and how you value everything else. You know, so my advice, you know, take financial, you know, planning or what have you courses. There's books you can read. There's so much, like I said, you can Google things, sit with a financial advisor, because the thing about it is that old saying, those who can't teach and those who can't do, but there's some advisors who, you know, pick their brains, because a lot of them just know, learn verbatimly, and they don't understand their own product sometimes that they're offering. So not all financial advisors are it, you know. they're not it. You know, you're going to find the ones that are passionate about what they do and the ones that are willing to teach, you know, who are willing to educate. That's the one you want to work with. You want to work with an advisor that is kind of like that ideal mentor boss, that they don't want to keep you with them. They want you to not need them. They want you to leave them. You know what I mean? Like, I want to teach them. I teach my clients. Every time I put my clients in something, I explain why, I explain what they're in, I explain my process. And then so they get confident so that they don't need me to do it, you know, because at the end of the day, I'm not going to be your financial advisor forever, or someone else is going to need more handholding. And I want you to be, you know, self-sufficient, you know, and still, you could still, you know, feel confident, and that builds confidence, because if you know that, hey, this guy's teaching me everything, or this woman or man is teaching me everything, and they're not being, you know, very vague or ambiguous, you're going to be more confident in trusting with this guy with more assets if you come into more assets, or referring this person to, you know, family or what have you, family and friends.
What do you suggest for a person in this age and time where they have a corona and they lose everything and then they want to start all over? And let's just, this, for example, they get a job they were making at one time, let's say, 90 grand a year, and then they have to get a job making $40,000 a year. How do they come back from that as far as their life? And they have a bunch of debt.
Okay. One, if they have a bunch of debt, you know, definitely, well, it depends the kind of debt. I mean, debt that they have, because there's also ways to consolidate. There's ways to that you could speak to the creditors, and you can get, you could pay, you know, sometimes 33 cents on a dollar, you know, and negotiate removing that debt. If the debt is too overwhelming, then they could file for bankruptcy. And I think a lot of debtors right now and creditors are very understanding because of the coronavirus. And it all, also another thing comes down to is, well, let me ask you this question, you two, and then I'll explain this. Which one, I'm going to give you an example of two people, and you tell me which one is rich. Well, okay. One person makes $40,000 a year. The other person makes $1.4 million a year. Which one's rich?
Well, one point it, something.
It, well, you can't really answer that question based on their income. It depends on their debt ratio as far as if the person making 1.4, he puts out 1.5 million, he's broke. Versus the person who makes 40 grand might live under his means.
Exactly. So that answers your question that you asked me before too. So let's say, let me finish the answer. Like you said, good job, Ray, because the person that makes 1.4, his debt is 2 million a year. The one who makes 40,000, he lives off of 15,000 a year. Mm. So you see what I'm saying? Because living below your means, you don't have to make millions to be rich, but living significantly below your means, yep, you could still be significantly wealthy because you have a surplus of cash. So to stay back, to go back to what you're saying, this person went from 90 to 40, you know, like I said, speaking to creditors, having them work for you and work with you. And then if that doesn't work, like I said, looking towards bankruptcy, and then starting to live below that means. Right now you're making 40. If you're canceling some of that debt or negotiating some of that debt, it's going to be a lot easier to get out of that hole, opposed to, you know, trying to take care of all that debt at one time. You know, it's having a plan, not being overwhelmed. And at the end of the day, it's going to hurt, but do I pay my credit card bill or pay my light and my food or whatever? So it's sometimes you know, it's hard, but you have to make, I'll have bad credit for a little bit because that could always be fixed. But having the lights, having your car paid for, the things that the necessities. I need a car to go to work. I'm going to have to take care of the car to go to work. You know, I need a roof for me. I'm going to have to pay that. So that's when it comes down to having a plan, knowing that what you're going through, you're going to get through. You know, what you go through, you grow through, right? Not being overwhelmed. And it takes a community, it takes a village, you know, having friends and family, you know, that's what I'd recommend coming from that scenario. What you said, making 90 to 40, and then having a lot of debt, just day by day. And like I said, start making a plan and living below your means until you get out that financial, deficit. And then know that once the economy picks back up, maybe reapplying and getting a job somewhere else, because it is going to pick back up, guys.
In the black community, you hear about people using check cashing versus going to the bank. Mm-hmm. You also hear about credit repair. What are your thoughts on that?
So check cashing places, those have, I honestly feel that those have been, they're kind of like, I don't know, to me, like the big perm, big worm in the community, ripping off our community, you know, exactly. Like coming from them, you know, and a lot of reason for that is that's based on a lot of systemic racism. So think about it, because we in the black community and brown communities, we were denied loans from the banks. Yep. So you have these hard loan places, these that come in here, charge you 20 something percent or what have you off your paycheck, you know, to, or take it to your car title. So my thing for that is, and it's tough. I mean, it's really tough because you don't know until you're in that scenario, in that situation. So I can't tell somebody, don't go to if the bank or what have you is not lending, or if you don't have friends and family. But look, if you're in that situation, definitely start to look for a way out of it. I would definitely not recommend going to a check cashing place because they are over the interest is way over what a bank loan would be or a personal loan would be. So I would try to avoid it. And like I said, it's kind of the main thing that could help someone start saving money is look at what you're spending on. First rule, I'd say budget. Write a list for first month, guys. Write a list of everything you're spending on: groceries, your cable, your cell phone bills. When you start writing down what you spend, you can find ways to borrow money from yourself by getting rid of, eliminating. If you're paying $200 for a phone bill, maybe you don't need like unlimited internet or what have you when you have Wi-Fi at home. So you could deduct some of it and bring your bill down to 160. That freed up $140. Maybe you don't need cable because cable, you have 300 channels, but you only watch in two or three. Maybe you could, you know, download, like, you know, Reggie knows there's some apps that you can download. So it's about reevaluating what you spend and do a budget. That's another way that you could free up money is budgeting yourself. See what you spend money on for the month. And then you will see going to work and spending $10, $12, $15 on lunch a day. You know, that's $50, $60 a week. Mm-hmm. Times that by four. You know, so you could see that there's a lot of ways that you can free up money. And people don't realize that once you start looking at what you're spending, it's easy to start saving. And that's another way that you can get out from utilizing those check cashing places. And what was the other place you mentioned? You mentioned one other thing.
Credit repair.
So you can pay a company to do it, but like I said, you could also do it yourself. Mm-hmm. All a credit repair company does is basically write a letter to a credit, you know, repair place, either to eliminate or to negotiate. And that's something that you could pick up the phone and you can call the debtor and say, hey, this is what I got. Or, you know, it's either this or nothing because, hey, it's 7 years and it's off my credit. It's already been five or what have you. Or if something's in, like, a lot of creditors, people don't realize, buy debt from a bank or what have you, whoever you have that debt with. One, you never sign an agreement with that creditor. So technically, they're not even supposed to have that. You don't really, really own it. You own it to, let's say, Bank of America, not that creditor. And they sometimes up their fees onto your debt. And you could go ahead and dispute the discrepancy, right. And it can get removed because the debt to the credit bureaus, all three of them, Experian, Equifax, and
TransUnion.
Mm-hmm. TransUnion, thank you. They will write the debtor and say, or collector and say, hey, can you show us how did you come up to this number? They have to provide proof. Mm-hmm. And they sometimes buy the debt without taking the statements or the proof. And if they can't provide it within 30 days, it gets removed from your debt. And nowadays with technology, you can dispute things right online and it takes two seconds, you know, from your phone. Mm-hmm. So there's no excuse. So instead of paying someone that's going to just do that for you, I would say first attempt to do what you can do yourself. And then when you reach to that hard spot where you can't get past this wall, then go ahead and look, you know, to probably hire a repair person, but you can basically do it yourself, honestly.
And to touch on what he was saying about, as far as apps you can download, he was talking about Netflix and Hulu for the FBI that's listening out there. Netflix and Hulu. You got you, Rick.
No, even I think YouTube has a channel. I mean, YouTube has TV now.
Yeah,
too.
You go. $59. Yes.
There's a lot of things.
It's the only ones I know about. It's the only ones I know.
Well, you know, technically, they said that cable is supposed to be free. You're just buying it from the provider. So technically, a lot of those things that you're talking about, they're just giving you access to it. So you're just
I'm so excited. Netflix and Hulu. I know that's what I'm all about them. Legit stuff.
It's so funny.
Yo, this dude, hey, you can call Reggie and talk about the hell? Dude, just send me down the river. Oh, look, what happened to you, Reg? I don't know. I invited my brother for financial men's health and the dude sent me to prison.
I just love the fact that you're like, instead of like pleading the fifth or something like that, you're just like, highlighting this so people could actually pay more attention.
I just said Hulu
went
and
over
Netflix.
Went over someone's head. And you're
it didn't
like
go over anyone's head. No, it didn't go over anyone's head. That dude was like, "You can talk to Reggie about
I said Reggie knows about it. You're like, Reggie know about nothing. Like
nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely nothing. So, someone starting off, let's say teenagers, even adults, because we have it that we have adults starting off late in life.
Mm-hmm.
What do you suggest typically to build credit? Let's talk about building credit, building a portfolio, an investment portfolio. What do you start with? I know real estate's big, but what do you start with? Do you start with a secured card? What do you start with? What do you suggest starting with?
Okay, so two different scenarios. Let's say if somebody's trying to build credit, a teenager, you know, first apply for a credit card, mm-hmm. You know, when they're 18, a lot of banks will supply a kid with a credit card. If not, go with a secured. And a secured credit card is not bad. What happens is a bank is just trying to see, before we lend you money, let's see how you spend your own money. So secured credit card, for those who don't know, is basically it's your money that you're borrowing against and you're paying it back. No interest being paid. You just, a bank wants to see how you pay yourself back. And typically after 6 months of doing that, having great behavior and discipline, a bank will then start opening up a line of credit and say, okay, here's your money back. And then here's $500 line of credit from us. When it comes to repairing credit, let's say somebody had bad credit, then going with a secured line of credit, that's a way to go as well. And, or, you know, I know typically a lot of people get approved after they've, you know, removed some of their debt and had bad credit. You know, a lot of like Capital Ones have high interest rate and have an activation fee. So you're going to have to suffer the consequences for your actions with either secured credit card or credit card with high interest rate and an annual fee or an activation fee of like $40-$60, which is fine because, like I said, there's an end to the means. Just know that it's a process, that it's not something you have to live into your entire life. It's just a stage, a season. So just having that discipline. And then after like 6 months or what have you of having one of those cards, like say one with a fee, like a Capital One, and you're paying it off every month. That's key, pay it off every month. Mm-hmm. Don't, you know, use, if you have the cash to buy something, $100, you're going to buy something that's $50, buy it and then pay it off right off your phone. Or you could just let it produce a bill and pay it off, set that money aside. And that's the key. So once they see that you're it's being reported and they see that you're paying off each month, go ahead and apply 6 months to a year for a credit card and that doesn't have an activation fee.
Yeah. What about as far as do you recommend them starting off? Because, you know, they get all wrapped up in the high interest, like you were talking about, the department credit cards they give out. You go to Old Navy, you go to Macy's, and they're giving you these high interest credit cards. Do you suggest that they just keep their credit card count low and just have one that they consolidate all their debt on? Or do you think they should have several credit cards that have, you know, like I said, the high interest with the department stores and whatnot?
Well, that's a good question. So I would not do department store credit cards because, once again, a bank is looking to see how you spent. If you get a department store credit card, you're locked into that department store. You know, some of them just let you use it for Old Navy or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But having a credit card that's cash, a bank now has an idea like, okay, this mofo is spending it on here. They're going to game thing. They're doing this. Mm-hmm. They're doing this. They're doing cash advances. Okay, risky. I don't want to. I'm not going to increase their credit line. We're going to keep it there because we don't trust, you know, they see your spending habits. Having three credit cards is basically the best way, three lines of credit. Let's say if you have a car, you have a credit card at Bank of America. Let's say you have one at your local credit union.
Yeah.
Let's say you have another credit card, because that's the fastest way to build credit. You have three different banks reporting credit. Not what people tend to do is they might say that, oh, I have two credit cards from Wells Fargo and I got a car on my auto loan from Wells Fargo. Well, that's great, but it shows us one thing's reporting credit.
Mm.
Having three different separate entities reporting it, it's going to build your credit the fastest.
Mm. Gotcha.
It's like a streamline. Yeah. Building credit.
That's good stuff.
And another thing too, for when you mentioned debt, a good way of paying off debt. So a lot of people, let's say if they have like, let's say 3 or 4 credit cards, you know, they'll start, you know, say they have one that's $5,000, one that's $1,200, two that's $1,000, and let's say one that's, I don't know, $800. Which one do you apply the bigger payment to?
You would probably do the one with the smallest amount first.
The bigger payment, the smallest amount, you said?
The one that you owe the least
amount. Is the least amount?
You start, I would say you start from the smallest to the largest.
Smallest to largest?
Yes.
Reggie?
Me? I would say you go, if it's the least, if there's more, I think isn't it less? So if you have a bigger credit card and you're paying a little bit on there, that's less interest on it, right? Is that what you're saying?
No, which one do you apply if you have remember, credit card, $5,000, lowest, yeah, $800, mm-hmm, you have one at 12 and then two that's like $1,000. What are you paying your extra payments to? Which credit card?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You pay the extra payments you put the extra payments to? Yeah. I would say the bigger one. That's me. I would say the bigger one.
So what you actually do, and Raymond's correct, it's a snowball effect. So think of a snowball rolling down a hill. We're going to go ahead and take the extra payments. We're going to put it towards the smaller one. Now, because you're going to pay off that smaller one faster. Now you have 4 credit cards to pay. So then you pay to the next one. Mm. So it's a snowball effect. And theoretically, you're going to pay off the biggest one last, but it's going to be faster as opposed to paying the bigger one.
That has a compound extra, interest.
Gotcha, or paying extra to all of them, pay to the smallest one.
Yeah.
Eliminate that and put that whole payment into the next ones with the extra. So that's another way of paying off debt faster, guys. And then also what I tell customers, consolidate. The best thing about the best thing I would tell my clients, take advantage of the 0%, roll your credit all into one, or if you can, or to two, take advantage of 0%. But they're like, well, Ricardo, it's for 12 months. I know, but on that 11 month, go ahead and apply for another one and move it over. And then that way you're still making your payments, but now you're paying 0%. So now you're paying your payments, all of it's going to principal, and the only interest you paid was the transfer fee of 3 or 5%, whatever it is, for the credit card. So transferring, that's another way, and keep doing it until that interest is that credit card debt's gone. And just have the discipline not charge the credit card.
Yeah.
You should always, before you invest, try to have we always say 6 to 9 months of expenditures, you know, saved. That way, if you invest and you lose your job, you don't have to pull from your investment. You have your payments, your monthly fees, your monthly expenses in your savings, and you're not pulling from your investments in the market.
And when you say 6 to 9 months of expenditure, do you mean 6 to 9 months of you being able to pay your bill, all your bills for 6 to 9 months.
Yeah, that's what they recommend.
Yep, your bills and food. Yep. So that if you were to lose your job, you're not pulling from your investment, because the thing about that is that, you know, the market goes up, it goes down, and it goes up again. You know, it goes up, it goes down, it stays flat, it goes up again. That's the one thing that we could say is guaranteed. No one knows what the market's going to do, but if you lost your job and the market's down, now you've just took a loss because you're pulling money out your account when the market's down. So having to have that security in your savings account that you know, you lose your job. And typically the average person would stay unemployed, you know, we'd say, you know, maybe 3-4 months. So they're not using all of that, but within that time they're back working. And then they can go ahead and start rebuilding back that savings account. But it gives that client more stability, more confidence in leaving their funds in the market.
That's something to definitely aim for, the 6 to 9 months, having that security.
Yeah, I agree when Ricardo said start off with your kids immediately.
Absolutely.
Talk about with your kids about how to treat people, talk about, you know, how to make friends, how to socialize, talk about, you know, going to college and stuff, but we don't talk about how to save.
That's
how to prepare for the future.
Yeah, that's because, like you said, we don't know.
how to invest.
We don't know. It's funny because we definitely don't talk about things. We definitely don't speak on things we don't know about. And it's for a lack of pride, I think, because it's like, I don't know.
It could be fair, too, though, because, you know, think about it as if, what if you didn't save or you didn't invest and you're trying to teach somebody something you don't know anything about?
No, I mean, that's a good thing to do, but I'm saying more likely it's almost like your kid asks you something, you're like, I don't know, go ask your uncle. I don't know. Like, it's almost like a reflection of yourself. It's almost like a self-realization when your kid's asking you. It's almost because your kid is a spitting thing of you,
right,
asking yourself, hey, how to go get me, you know, it's almost like, oh, I want to go get a bank card. There's a pride there, but there's also like, oh my gosh, let me go get a bank card. Let me go get this. What are you going to say?
Well, let me give you an example. So one of my clients, when I was working at the bank, the banker gave me a client, and he was cashing us some money from 401k. And I told him, hey, I went cashing this money. Let me show you how to grow it, what you can do with it, in case he was going to put it to his home. I told him, no, let's refinance your home. Mm-hmm. Then he was telling me, I was like, you know what? I would recommend bringing your son in here. He said he had a son. And I said, yeah, bring your son in here. You know, I'll show him, you know, what I do and, you know, teach him about investing and finance, what have you. And he said to me this, he's like, oh, you know, the funny thing, I talk to my son all the time. I tell him he needs to save his money and not spend it on this, that, and the third. And, yeah, but he doesn't listen. And I said to him this example, if I go, do you play sports? He goes, no. I go, so if your son was playing basketball, or let's say if somebody's playing basketball and you're giving advice, you don't play basketball at all, you know, is that person going to listen to you? He's like, no. You know, if you tell them how to shoot, they play basketball, but you can't shoot a dime, but you tell them how to shoot, like the proper way to shoot. Is he going to listen to you? He's like, why? And he said, no. I said, why? Because I can't, you know, I'm not, I can't shoot, blah, blah, blah. Exactly. You're not saving. So how are you going to tell your son to save if you're not doing? Because one thing kids do, guys, is kids are the only thing in this world, before you ruin them, that are the most honest and the most, like, they learn from watching the truest form. You know, it's like, for example, when you hear your kid say, oh, shut up, mom. And you go, and the person's like, who are you telling shut up to? And like, well, I saw you. You said it to Baba. Well, do as I say, not as I do. Mm-hmm. What? Mm-hmm. Do as I say, not as I do. So these kids watch and learn. They don't go from what you say. They go from what you do. Mm-hmm. Just like you tell a kid, when a kid goes, oh my God, mom, he smells like bologna. Oh, that's not very nice. So we teach kids to lie. Mm-hmm. Well, don't say he smells like bologna. It's going to hurt his feelings. So immediately we're taught to lie and what have you from our parents. Mm-hmm. So the best way to teach your kids is to implement, to do. Mm-hmm. So, and we, what I must commend people that are, that have knowledge of wealth and finances and, have that generational wealth is that they teach their kids the meaning of money and what it means. They teach their kids about savings accounts, and they show the kids about the market, or they're bringing their kids into an investment appointment, or they're showing the kids like, hey, this is your savings account is growing. You know, I'm going to put this into, where do you like Nike? Okay, we're going to buy Nike. So here for your birthday, I'm not buying you pure Nikes. Which stock do you want? You want Nike or you want Reeboks? Mm-hmm. And then they show them, like, they're teaching their kids. They're getting them involved because, like you stated, Reggie, there's a lack of knowledge. Mm-hmm. So we don't talk about things we don't know about. Or if what we talk about is credit. Oh, it's the devil. Stay away from credit. It got your grandma, you know, and she's still in debt. Yeah. It's just bad, you know. So we teach our kids what we don't understand, to fear it. So instead of that, the approach is, hey, you know what? Let's learn. She needs to be. Let's learn this together. You know, I'm. You know what? I'm going to meet with a financial advisor. I want you to come along with me. You know, that's how you start. It's first accepting that you do not know, but then accepting I want to learn. I want to know. You know, and making that putting that first foot forward, because only then, like I said, once you face it, It can't overcome you if you face it. Mm-hmm. But if you run from it, it becomes you. It overpowers you. It owns you.
Right.
You know what I mean? So the key is to face it, to learn, and like I said, involve your kids with it. I mean, teach your kids about the, you know, the value of money. Like, we so often don't teach them. I mean, you'll hear like, "Oh, I paid for this. I worked my butt off for it." Like Reggie knows, our mom used to like send us back to like Wendy's if they put onions on it, and she said no onions. They're like, "Huh?" And she's like, "I worked my mom would just take." I mean, she's like, "No, you don't understand. I worked my butt off for that." Mm-hmm. And then not until you get a job, you understand. Like when they mess up your order, now we become like, "Oh no, they put the onions on." Exactly. Because you worked your butt off for that money. So it's teaching that same the kids the value of money and to respect it. Mm-hmm. I think us as a community, we don't respect money. And we think idolizing money is the same thing. It's not. You know, there's people who idolize money. We don't respect money, and we kind of mix the two in the one. And because if we respect money, I tell you what, you're not going to spend $400, $500 of some sneakers.
Yep.
You know, if you worked a whole, you know, that's a whole half a day or whatever, or a week, you know, half of your wages, you're not going to go spend it on that if you respect it. You know what I mean?
Right.
But if you respect money, you're going to have that discipline to say, you know what, I'm going to live live like when it comes to spending expenditures, I'm going to spend less, live less of a, you know, extravagant life now so I can live a full life later on instead of trying to do it all, you know, trying to get to the club, trying to spend all your thing and living like you got it. And then you're like, damn, I ain't got the rent, you know, because you want to live like you have it now. And we need to be practicing to live within our means, below our means, so that we could have all that we want later on and not have to be, you know, 60 years old past our retirement saying, "Welcome to Walmart."
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. We want to be able to work because we want to work at 60, not because we have to. So, a lot of people, you know, don't realize. So you hear like Social Security and people think, "Oh, I'm going to have Social Security." Well, they may or may not be around, and Social Security is what you pay in, you know, the taxes that you pay into Social mm-hmm. Security. You know, you want to make sure that when you retire, you know, you have a little bit of income from Social Security. Hopefully there's a pension if you're working at some company. The other thing is going to be retirement account, or you have a retirement or investment account, mm-hmm. Or your own little annuity that you set up, and then you're going to have these little pockets all producing one income. And the goal is, by the time you retire, let's have no debt. So that way, if you're making with Social Security, let's say your Social Security is $500 a month, and let's say with your pension or retirement, you're taking out $1,000 or $1,500, so mm-hmm. $2,000 a month. People are like, "Oh, I can't live off $2,000 a month." Well, if you have no debt,
yep.
You could live very well off $2,000 a month, and you're taking little pieces while your money's still working in the market that will take you through to your days, you know, and then you can have a nice full life. The funny thing is that people, you know, as Americans, we spend more time planning the family vacation than we do for retirement.
Mm, wow. I believe it.
Let that sink in.
It did.
You know, let that sink in. We spend more time annually on thinking about like where to go on family vacation than our retirement planning. So there lies a key to success is to plan ahead. We live for today. That YOLO, you only live once. Yes. Everyone only lives once. Mm-hmm. Just like when like, "Oh, you're 21. You only turn 21 once." Yeah. You only turn every age once. Doesn't mean that we just live like today's the last day, because it may not be. So you enjoy life, live life, enjoy the present, but know that you want to make sure that if you live beyond you, what your dad or your mother or whatever, your family's like age and everybody's like, "Oh," that you have enough to live on and that you don't run out of money. You know what I mean? That's the key, is to make sure you don't run out of money.
Yeah. That's what happened with
every time.
Yeah. That's what happened with Kate's grandmother, Grandma Madge. She outlived her Social Security and stuff like that, and living in a nursing home, you know what I mean? So, and then the debt falls back on
the family,
you know what I mean? So.
Yeah. Well, the Social Security will always be there. You could outlive like if you have a, annuity. Some people, if you have annuity, that's a certain like or retirement, you spend out of your retirement. But typically, Social Security is going to be there for the rest of your life.
Well, I'm saying as far as with her money, like, you know, with her not, well, selling the house so they can get, so you get a nice nursing home. So you outlive that money. So it's, so mm-hmm. that way you can get a good facility and I'll take care of you, not Social Security secure nursing home that, hey, you might have bed sores.
And a key to that too, like, before you ask a question is another thing too. Let's say if you're a single parent or you're married or what have you, and you have debt, let's say you have $200,000 in debt and you have five or whatever kids, take out life insurance to cover that gap. You know what I mean? At $200,000, maybe it has an extra $200,000, what have you, and for the kids or what have you. But take that extra debt. If you pass away, then your spouse is not left with that debt. They own the home now, because then that debt can go and pay off the debt, the cars, what have you. They own that. Mm-hmm. Now they have a fresh start to begin on, and they have a little bit extra. That's the significant reason for like a lot of those life insurance, and those we always recommend as a term, you know, taking advantage of a term life insurance, not a whole life insurance. Whole life insurance is the one that I like. Whole life insurance, because whole life insurance is a little bit pricier, but it goes into an investment. They invest it, and you can. It's making money too, and it gets to the point where those whole life insurance will be self sufficient, because you could not even. You get to a point where it's actually paying its own fee, because it's paying the actual premium. Mm-hmm. Once it gets to a certain amount, and then you could always take the money out when you're done with it. When you want to cancel the whole life term insurance is where you basically, let's say it's a 5 or 10 years, so you know, okay, damn, I got 5 years, you know, if anything happens to me, I know the kids are our last one. She's 13. Okay. 5 years, 18. Okay. I want to make sure if anything happens in this 5 years, it's going to cover her college, cover the house, blah, blah, blah. That way the 5 years is done. The term is done. And you can extend it after the term. It might be a little pricier, because then you go up in age, the premium goes up in age, but a term is meant for exactly what it is. It's for a certain amount of term, a 5-10 year, just like a car loan, you're taking out a term, but that's the goal. It's to, you're taking care of the debt for a certain period of time. Like I said, it might be because one of your youngsters or one of your kids are still young, and you want to make sure it covers them for that. If anything were to happen to you, so you take out that insurance, it helps your wife out with your debt, the gap of, you know, what debt you have, and maybe a little surplus. That, you know, a little 100, 200,000 or whatever to keep them afloat.
Right.
Gotcha. What key factors or key points you want to leave for people that, like you said, what key points you want to leave with the audience members to start off something maybe next week, maybe next year? Do you, for those people that have nothing, do they start saving now, or do they start saving after Christmas and the holidays? Because that's what everyone does, the New Year's resolution. When do you tell them to start? What do you want to leave the audience with? What key factors, what key points as far as starting anything, whether starting their, building their credit, start savings account? When do they start? When should they start with the New Year around the corner and the holidays? What do you suggest? Because I know you get that asked all the time.
I always say you start now. You start when you get a paycheck. You start with an unemployment check. You start, some people are getting paid more on unemployment than they did a paycheck. Mm-hmm. So you start saving today, because here's the thing, treat your savings as a bill. That's a point I keep wanting to make. It's a bill. Do you wait to say, damn, I'm going to pay my Verizon next month? No, your phone's off, right? But you, that's a thing I told you. We value what we buy is what we respect, and not we don't value the currency that we earned to buy it. So, and the work ethics to get that money, we don't value ourselves. We're buying, we're more worried about the phone connection, you know, like having service, opposed to our savings accounts. Mm-hmm. And it's the craziest thing when you ask somebody, you know, when I say, oh, put $100 away in your savings, and they say, oh, I don't have $100 to save a month. And they almost say it as if it's not for them. They almost say it like they're giving it to someone else. Oh, wow. Because we have this negative stigma for when it comes to investing in savings in ourselves. Yeah. And that's a lot. Like I said, there's and that has to do with so much subliminal things when it comes to advertisements and the media and movies, where we do not value ourselves enough. Mm-hmm. You know, we think that wearing
our wealth,
Prada, yeah, Versace, the Gucci's, is a way that
Jordans,
that, yeah, the Jordans is, it puts it, that makes our value.
Yep.
You know, that gives us wealth and worth, and it's so much more than that. You know what I mean? But that's what we don't realize, that even though the Jim Crow laws and we're not wearing a brand yoke on us,
a yoke and a brand, we're, yeah,
but we are. The Tommy Hilfigers, yep, the polos, the Gucci's. We're just a modern day slave.
Mm-hmm. To the, you brand, know what I mean? Yeah, they had like a documentary that I forgot what it was called, Brand or something, Branded. Oh,
so
they were saying everything's a brand, Coca-Cola, everything, and we're wearing it. Like we're enslaved, we're enslaved to all these brands. Yeah.
You know, and so my thing is, like I said, is you start today. You know, I always say my saying is, it's not the amount of money in your wallet, it's the amount of determination to change your outcome and your destiny, you know, and create a dynasty. So I don't care what's in your wallet. It's what's in, it's the conviction in you and your drive to change that.
Anyway, man. Yeah, man, we definitely appreciate your time, brother.
Thank you very much.
I know what you came in short notice and stepped up to the plate. Appreciate that.
And thanks for answering the question about you guys' group. I appreciate that as well.
That won't even be on the show, bro.
The guys group.
That won't even be on the show, bro. Now we definitely appreciate it. I think you highly, you gave the audience, you gave us something to think about.
You did. You definitely did.
I know Raymond's going to go home and think about life. You got this dude over here gonna sit there and organize a portfolio and everything.
I got young boys and I got young kids.
I was gonna say, bro, you got young and old kids. Yeah. You got,
but you know, so we always try to preach them about things, but a lot of good tips you gave me tonight. So I'm gonna reevaluate what I've been thinking and include what you've been saying and come up with a game plan.